How's it going? Irish Golfer Podcast coming at you here. Ronan McNamara in the hot seat. And you hear a lot about your dream four ball, whether it be the royalties of celebrities or golfers alike. But Mark McGowan, I think you'd have to say, are we the dream singles pairing?
No question about it. The Ryder Cup four ball foursomes, whatever way you want to send us out, we'll go out and we'll do a job for you.
You at top of the draw, man, or would you like to go out towards the anchor?
Look, it doesn't matter. Just whoever you put in front of me, I'll go out, I'll do the job, I'll get the point. But when it comes to singles, either first or last, either send me out to get the first point on the board or last to bring it home.
Bring it home for County Sligo or bring it home for Ballybuffet, Stranorla?
I'm pretty fond of County Sligo, but I'm a Ballybuffet man, born and bred, so
keep it local.
No question about it.
On that, who would be in your dream four ball?
Jesus, are we talking golfers or are we talking just random people?
I will put golfers and celebrities. You can be whimsical about it.
Right. Alive and dead.
Both, yeah.
All right. I'd have to have Tiger in there. Then Shane McGowan. Don't think he's much of a golfer, but I reckon he'd bring a bit of entertainment. And Jesus, last man. Somebody for a good laugh. Maybe Billy Connolly, maybe.
Not so bad. I'd go with Tiger, of course. Stephen Gerrard and Ronnie O'Sullivan. And sure, look, you'd have to throw myself in there as well, I'd say, you know.
Yeah, well, I think it went without saying that we were part of the four ball.
Some people leave themselves out.
Well, that's not much of a dream four ball. Those people need to dream a little bit bigger.
That's true. Right, look, we're going to get stuck into it. And before we kick on, this podcast is sponsored by Flowgas, making greens greener, sponsoring all levels of Irish golf, whether it be from players playing professionally or to sponsoring a load of amateur tournaments around the country, including the Irish Amateur Championship and the Women's Irish Amateur Championship this year. Mark, we're a real amateur golf-centric podcast here this evening. It's going to be a full West of Ireland love-in tonight, and you were obviously covering it there for the 5 days that it was on. You didn't get wet. You didn't really get blown out of it, much to my disappointment. How did you find the week?
Yeah, it was pretty different from last year, all right. The wind definitely did blow. The wind was there, particularly on the second day of stroke play. It got pretty strong, but yes, somehow, somewhere, I don't know what I did. I obviously did something good in a past life, maybe, but God or Mother Nature or whoever you worship shone down upon us, and yeah, the rain stayed away. Even got a bit of sunshine, and for the last day in particular, pretty calm. Like, there was slight minor wind, but not too much at all. So yeah, I mean, it was great weather, as good as you could hope for, really.
And Keith Egan from Carton House obviously won the final, beating local man David Brady, who plays out of Strafford, in a final, a very good final as well, it must be said, considering the amount of holes both players have played over the 5 or 6 days there. Was he a worthy winner in the end?
Yeah, absolutely. No, Keith, I think Keith was definitely the best player of the week. He didn't finish his leading stroke play qualifier, but he was, I think he might have been joint second or third, something like that. I don't have my notes right in front of me here for it, but Keith finished, he on day two, that what you mentioned was like the really windy day, Keith went round and one under. It was one of only two under par rounds on the day, and he actually went round bogey free, which, I mean, given the strength of the wind, like, that's serious golfing. I mean, he never, like, I think he only trailed one of his, prior to the final, he trailed one of his match play matches for a grand total of one hole. Other than that, he'd been up in all of them, and led, or he did trail for two holes in the final, but once he, you know, that was early on, he went behind on the third, got back level on the fifth, and took the lead in the sixth, and never relinquished it from there. So, a very worthy winner. And I mean, his all round play was like extremely impressive, but his short game stuff was like definitely the standout feature for me. Kind of every, you know, in match play, you have so many of those moments, you know, where you may be on the green, your opponent misses the green, and you, like, you know, you're automatically kind of rubbing your hands together, thinking like, this is, you know, I've got, you know, you think you have it, and then you think you have the hole, and next thing you know, he chips it stone dead, or chips it into about 6 feet, and holds the putt. And you know, those sort of things can, you know, they can be real sort of like heartbreaking or crushing blows. You know, in a way, you'd probably much rather if somebody just, you know, hit their second shot to 25 feet, and you know, put it up to a foot, and you know, you concede the par putt. That's preferential in ways than them maybe missing the green, chipping to 6 feet, and holing that 6 footer, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like those kind of 6 footers, when you see it held, it can kind of shrug your own shoulders and give the opponent a bit of confidence. It was a cracking week, Mark, you have to say. Like a bit of history rolling all the way through it. Like David Brady coming through the qualifier, came so close to becoming the first qualifier to win the West of Ireland. I suppose in many ways he's the people's champion, given the crowds that were following him throughout the knockout stages.
I mean, he's definitely the people's champion for the locals, for sure. I mean, no, take nothing away from Keith. Although Keith's actually got Sligo roots himself. Keith's mother was from Strandhill, so, and believe it or not, Keith's cousin John McHugh is actually my partner in the club four ball and in the Winter League. So I didn't actually know that until Keith was playing his quarter final, I think, and we kind of encountered each other in the course, and I realized I was like, oh, there's a Sligo man up in front, but you're following this match. So John put me right there. But yeah, I mean, David Brady, I mean, he was the story of the week in so many ways. I mean, coming through the qualifier, you know, in itself, nobody really expects the guys that get through the qualifier to go that deep into the tournament. There's usually a couple of, particularly when it's back to 64, 64 men for match play, as it was this year. There's always a couple of the qualifiers that will make it through, but very, very few of them ever go really deep. And I mean, David Brady's story, for anybody that didn't catch up on it, on any of the reports or on the social media stuff and everything, on the second day of stroke play, David had a little bit of a mix up with his tee time. He was down on the range, warming up, and got a phone call to say, where, you know, a bit of a, where the hell are you? Turns out he was due on the tee, so managed to, I mean, thankfully for him, he actually had his phone turned on, you know, that our, you know, the volume was up, it wasn't on silent. Otherwise he would have been disqualified altogether. But he got up onto the first tee a couple of minutes late, or definitely late. I'm not sure if it was a couple of minutes, but late anyway. And his dad was actually the starter on the first tee, and his dad had to inform him that he was getting a 2-shot penalty. So obviously the referee would have been the one actually assessing the penalty, but his dad was the one who informed him. So I mean, he managed to overcome that. He was going out. He was also going out in like the worst of the weather on that day. That was going out when the wind was at its absolute highest. You know, it was already going to be a struggle to get through that round, to get it, and to get into the match play section of it, into the top 64. But to overcome, you know, a 2-shot penalty on the first tee, you know, it's pretty impressive going. Like, Then in straight into the match play, and in his first round of match play, he comes up against Hugh Foley. Hugh needs no introduction. Obviously one of the big pre-tournament favorites, and again without the two-shot penalty, you know, Brady would have run into somebody else. So there might have been a temptation to think, well, Jesus, like if only I hadn't been late, then you know I wouldn't be playing arguably the best player in the tournament here. But well, it didn't matter since, and David went and I think David beat him 3-2 anyway. So I mean, played serious golf. Ended up going and knocking out Matt McLean in the quarterfinals. In that match, he needed. Oh, sorry, but in between, I even forgot about this one. He ended up playing his cousin Aegon Brady from, who does play out of County Sligo. That was an incredible match. Went to the 18th hole. Aegon knocked the 18th hole all square, and Aegon knocked one into about 6 feet. And David ended up holing a birdie putt from about 30 feet, maybe, and Aegon missed. And then from the next day when they went out, Aegon was caddying, or then that evening against Matt McLean, Aegon was caddying for David. And David ended up going three down with three to play, I think, against Matt McLean. Won all three of them. Again, birdied 18, and then won the match in the 19th. So, and then in the semi-final, he went 24 holes with Paul Coughlin from Castleknock. That was an incredible match. David had been three up through 13, ended up losing the next four to go one down playing 18. And I mean, we all thought at this point, you know, his race is run, he's done. And nearly holed out from the middle of the fairway on 18 to make birdie, take the match down in the 19th, and ended up taking 24 holes to separate them. So I mean, God bless him, he was absolutely knackered, I would say, come the end of the match with Keith. And he ran into somebody that wasn't going to, you know, wasn't willing to lay up or to ease off or anything. Once Keith got his nose in front, he was, you know, he was ruthless. So in many ways, David Brady was the story of the week, but Keith Egan was an incredibly worthy champion. And I mean, somebody who's delivering on potential that's been there for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And David, in fairness to him, like, he went on the dream run that you want to take out the big boys and take a few scalps. And the atmosphere, you put up the video on Twitter when he held the winning putt against Paul Coughlin, was unbelievable. And for those listening, we're not glossing over Keith here, and he is the champion, of course, and we do have a chat with Keith to play for you in a little while. But we just had to give our props to David Brady, because it really was a fantastic run, and who knows, he might be back next year. Mark, obviously this year was the first time in a couple of years that the West went back to the traditional 36 holes stroke play qualifying, with the top 64 qualifying for the match play. And just looking at the leaderboard here after 36 holes, obviously Mark Doug of Castleknock won the qualifier. Keith Egan was second, David Shield third, Order of Merit winner, Paul Coughlin fourth, and then you had Matt McLean, you had Collie Campbell, you had James Fox, you had Peter O'Keefe, Paul Hanlon, Hugh Foley, and a load of other big names, TJ Ford as well. It's fair to say that the new format brought the cream back to the top again this year.
It did. I mean, it definitely did. It was great match play. I mean, yeah, literally, I think virtually all the big names of the pre-tournament favorites were in the 64. As you were listing those names out there, there's a lot of guys that wouldn't have been there if it was just 16. And because this year was quite, let's say, the guys that played late the first day and early the second day definitely had, you know, a considerable advantage on the field weather-wise, because the wind kind of died down a little bit on Friday evening, and you know, really picked up again on Saturday afternoon. So It would have been a real kind of unfair advantage. Look, over a 4-round tournament, it's not quite as severe because, you know, the leaders will go out kind of like together, on you know, your Saturday and Sunday. But in when it's just 2 rounds to qualify, it would have made a huge difference. So I think it was definitely a win for the tournament, a win for the format this year. Look, we spoke about it last week. I did say that I saw the logic and I saw what they were trying to do, or what, at least what I thought that they were trying to do by going to the 54 holes of stroke and then 16 to qualify for match play. But I think this tournament definitely benefited from it being a 64, 36 and 64 split.
Yeah, absolutely. And the LPGA Tour, just a coincidence, it's gone to 54 holes of qualifying, with 8 going through to the quarterfinal. For those who are going to be watching it this year, no, this week, sorry. And back to Keith then, Mark. You mentioned he was tapping into the potential, you know, that he's always shown, and you spoke to Neil Manship as well, who agreed with you on that point after the tournament. He spoke about
Oh yeah,
battling a couple of
great minds think
demons.
alike.
Yeah. He spoke about battling a couple of demons from the south of Ireland in 2019, when he lost out to Sean Desmond on the last hole, and he mentioned how it kind of haunted him for, you know, a couple of years. And then speaking to him today, he mentioned how he had a good chance in the Irish Close last year up in Malone, didn't quite get that done the final day. So he spoke of a change in approach, and it definitely paid off for him. He was more focused on himself rather than what was going on around him.
He told us afterwards that in that final of the South, well, between the semi-final and the final match, so in the afternoon he went up and had some food and was kind of like, you know, was sort of, you know, hanging around with friends and stuff, and he thinks he kind of lost his focus between the matches. And then, I mean, he had a So look, we did say that, you know, David Brady's match went 24 holes and he was tired. But on the flip side, Keith's match had finished early, so Keith ended up like kind of hanging around, not knowing exactly when the final was gonna start, and to keep his focus during that period when, I mean, there's a lot happening around you, and he was just, you know, trying to blot it out and just stay focused. And you know, that's no easy thing to do whatsoever. And he spent so he was down on the putting green working quite a lot. I kind of half approached him, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't definitely didn't want to talk, so I quickly steered clear of him again. I mean, he did extremely well to keep his focus during that. And yeah, he talked a lot about how what he'd learned from the previous time, and that he was very, very conscious not to make the same mistakes again, of kind of allowing his mind to drift away from it, you know. And look, things that works for some people, it doesn't work for other people. Some people need, you know, need to take their mind off golf and everything. Keith's obviously not, that's not the way things work for him. So I mean, yeah, full credit to him for, you know, for learning from his mistakes from before and putting it right.
Exactly. And I suppose he is an example in a way of, I suppose, what fitness can help in those situations as well. Because as we know, he's big into getting fit and getting fit for golf, getting golf specific fitness. And he said after he spoke to you that, you know, he felt absolutely fine. Whereas, you know, when you're playing a marathon tournament like that, the golf in the final might not be the best, but it seems like his fitness gave him that extra gear or two when he needed it in the final.
Yeah, he's a guy that's in excellent physical shape. I was doing some of the commentary for Ocean FM, and who'd have a live feed going out during the tournament and everything. And well, Robbie Fitzpatrick, one of the guys that was on co-coms with me, more than once mentioned that, you know, Keith and myself have similar physiques. Not myself, now Keith and Robbie. But either one is a joke, either regardless anyway. So, but yeah, no, Keith's in, he's in excellent shape. And it like it helps mentally as well. I guess it's an extremely rigorous tournament. You know, it's you play 36 holes over 2 days, and then it's 36 holes a day for 3 days, potentially, like, for the. So I mean, we worked it out. Like, David Brady, not including practice rounds, in the space of a week, had played 184 holes of golf, 184 competitive holes of golf. Keith would have played less than that because he didn't play the qualifier and didn't go as far as the 24th hole in a match. But still, that's still he played an awful lot of golf last week, and to the mental and physical wear and tear on you. I mean, he looked, but at the same time, he looked so well equipped to handle it. He didn't look in any way fatigued, and I mean, that's full credit to him, to his fitness regime. And I'll tell you, if he wants to come up and set up a Golf Strong gym up here, or him and Peter, then I'll join.
Exclusively just for you, Mark.
I mightn't go too often, but I'll join. That's the story of my gym career.
And I suppose another one of the stories from the West that I found particularly captivating was just the enormity and the size of the crowds. Particularly, they were following David, of course, but the video you posted in the final, you can just see Keith Egan in the bottom left of the foreground there, just submerged in about 200, 250 people. And as the camera pans, the crowd funnels on, and there's a man walking his dog, and then there's some fella probably lost now, but he's there cycling his bike up one of the fairways. And you wrote a column about this evening. It just shows the raw emotion and how unfiltered and just normal amateur golf is.
Well, to be fair, it was a lady on a bike, not a fella on a bike. Now, just in case she happens to be listening and gets offended.
Was she wearing a high viz?
No, She was wearing, there was definitely kind of definitely fluorescent colors on it involved anyway.
That's it. Be safe, be seen.
But yeah, no, it was like the crowds were incredible. There was a really good atmosphere around it. You know, it was like, there's various other videos I have at different times where I'm kind of trying, you know, pan in the crowd, and you know, it was. You know, like sometimes when they're hitting the shots, they had that kind of, like, you know, that real sort of, you know, the tunnel, almost like you see at professional events when Tiger goes into the rough and he's hitting shot out, and you just see this shoot of down the center of a load of people. But obviously not quite to that extent. Now, I'd be exaggerating if I was trying to say it was, but yeah, the massive galleries, and particularly some of the matches that would finish on 18, because there's, you know, everybody that was out following the matches naturally followed them 18. But then there are a lot of people then that kind of just sort of stay around the clubhouse, and once a match, you know, starts to come up 18, they all come out as well again. So it's I mean, the 18th green at County Sligo Golf Club is a pretty big green, and at times for matches they were like, you know, people were like too deep all the way around it. Like, you know, that's pretty impressive going.
Yeah, and hopefully a similar crowd, if not bigger, can come out for the Flogas Men's Irish Amateur Open Championship in May, because it's obviously going to Ross's as well. You probably won't be there. I think I'm on duty this time around, Mark. So I'll try to do half as good a job as you did.
Yeah, I'll give you a key to the front door here.
Sneaking in a few cans.
Well, I'll be leaving none for you anyway. You have to bring them with you.
Good stuff. Right. Well, we're going to bring you the Keith Egan interview now. And this is the last we're going to hear of Mark on today's edition of the podcast. So before we let him go, I have to commend him on what a fantastic job he did over the 5 days. Gave up his bank holiday. Look, he's man of the people. Not everyone gets their day off on the bank holiday. Some of us are putting in the work and slaving away for the good of the public, bringing everybody the information from the west of Ireland. So Mark's going to head off now, and Keith Egan joined me today in the Hermitage. He was tucking into a lovely chicken wrap, and while he was talking to me, his phone was still hopping from all the messages. So we're going to play you out on this edition of the podcast with my chat with Keith Egan today.
I'm still getting messages from loads of people. I made a good effort yesterday trying to respond to everyone. Like I said, I had over 300 and whatever messages on WhatsApp, and then I had about this, something similar on Instagram as well. So it took me a whole day to really get back to everyone. And I made an effort just to do as little as possible yesterday, and I went up to Carton House. I put the trophy in the pro shop, and I just kind of enjoyed seeing the members who kind of supported me over the last few days. So just trying to soak it all in more than anything, as I understand of playing in these things for years, like how difficult it is to win. So and then I think like trying to enjoy it as much as possible will probably make me understand the value of it as well, so then I can kind of kick on and then try win a few more. So so I was just trying to enjoy the whole process of it.
Yeah, and the celebrations, have you kind of kicked those off, or are you kind of taking it easy?
I haven't had any plans for celebrations. I'm going to go back to the Curra Golf Club tomorrow with my dad and my mum, and then enjoy with them. That's the most important thing, I think. And then for some of the members in Carton House, or in the Curra, which is where I started playing golf. So that'll be very enjoyable. And then the captain's drive-in is in Carton on Saturday, and then the junior drive-in is on Sunday, so I'll hang around and celebrate as much as I can with them. But I'm sure I'll go mad on Saturday night. I'm just not going to plan anything, because it's I don't want to build it up too much. I just want to enjoy everything as it comes, and then especially enjoy it over the weekend, and then kind of leave it at that. They've really put a big emphasis on how important it was to win. And then seeing some friends coming into the gym here and chatting to me about it is also very cool. So yeah, it's definitely sinking in now. And then I spent a lot of yesterday actually just watching shots from the final as well, with all the everyone from the media that was following us. We're lucky now that we actually get to reminisce and actually enjoy and watch and see how the golf was actually in the final, and from watching all of that, yeah, it's definitely sinking in now.
Yeah, Irish amateur golf is kind of big now, isn't it? There's a lot of media coverage, a lot of social media stuff as well, so it kind of feels like when, I suppose, the tournaments are on, it's bigger than an amateur tournament. There is something about it now that's really got grabbing people's attention.
Big time. It's booming. And a lot of, you guys deserve so much credit for that. Irish golfer, Golf Ireland are making much more of an effort now, but I think their effort is a reaction to what you guys have been doing, and that's so important for us. If I'm not playing in a tournament, I know exactly what's going on, and I'm very aware, and I want to know then, because it's all on my Instagram, it's all on my Twitter. You can't avoid it. So it is booming, and it's great to see. I'm doing podcasts. I did a podcast yesterday. I'm doing a couple of podcasts next week, and I'm chatting to you about this. It feels very professional. It feels way more professional than it did, when I started playing, or even in the last few years before the pandemic. So, and I think what it does is just, even for lads growing up, young lads growing up, it allows them to see what's good golf, and this what the standard of a final is, or what the standard of a good match is in the West. So it gives everyone a good perspective of and a good understanding of what the West really is, or what these championships really are.
And you're obviously knocking on the door for a year or two there, especially.
Yeah.
Did you always believe that it would come? You finally get your name on one of those trophies.
But
you have to keep believing.
I did believe, but there was definitely a lot of doubt, because I played terrible last year, and I had a chance to kind of maybe win the Irish Close last year, and then just didn't have a good finish. But yeah, I definitely felt like it, but I was doubting myself because my golf wasn't great. But then, yeah, they're very hard to win, and you have a lot of very good players as well, so playing in them, and there's a lot, so many good young players coming through, so it's you do start to doubt yourself. But at the end, back of my mind, I knew that if I can play well and string together some good golf, I can get it done. So and that's why I enjoy the competition. So that's kind of what keeps driving me back to playing these.
Yeah, and like you spoke about your change in approach after the win there on Tuesday. Like, what was the change in approach? Like, what kind of clicked?
I think talking to a lot of people and the preparation that I did over the winter, I think focusing more on myself rather than focusing on an outcome, focusing on leaning into what makes me very good rather than what I think is very good. Like, instead of thinking of my golf all the time, start thinking about, like, emotionally what I need to do to perform well, physically what I need to do to perform well. And really putting an emphasis on, like, what makes me great or what makes me very good, and then leaning into that. I did that in the past. I've done that at times. Be very, very aware of, like, my own abilities and what makes me good. So it was mainly just shifting my focus from external to internal and being as internal as possible with my process. And so anything that anyone else did was kind of irrelevant. It was just all about me and what I did. And I think from looking at videos and stuff from the week, it kind of looked like that and it felt like that. So that made me very calm, because anything that happened was kind of irrelevant. It was all about just how I reacted and how I felt about things.
Golf is a sport. I think everyone has their own, like, bad experiences when they do play. And you obviously mentioned the South in 2019, I think it was. And how the final didn't go your way, and how the experience kind of, you know, stuck with you for a little while. What did you learn from that to take into the final of the West? And, like, did you think of the South at all when you were playing?
Yeah, I thought about it a lot, because I think as golfers, I think what you can, for me anyway, I'm not going to speak for all golfers, but, like, for me, what you can accept bad golf, like bad execution, but what you can't accept is, like, how you... What I can't accept is, like, how I react to things, or how I treat an occasion or treat things. And I think in the South in 2019, I played very, very well, like, especially ball striking wise. I was very, very good. I struggled a little bit on the greens, but it was more so when, like, during the final, like, how I treated the whole occasion. And, like, I thought too much about the situation I was in and the score of the match, instead of thinking about my own ability and my own score versus the course and little things like that. And, like, maybe if I did that differently, I still wouldn't have won, and I think that would have been fine. I could accept that, but it was just how I handled the situation is what stuck with me and what annoyed me and what made me very disappointed. And I think that maybe affected me moving forward a little bit. And then I was very aware going into the final, especially after my morning match. Actually, even going into my morning match with Ross Lattimore, I understood what I needed to do to win. I understood that I didn't need to be great. I didn't even need to be at my best to win. I understood, like, that I needed to shoot a score. I understood that I was playing against very, very good players, but I understood that I just needed to hang around, and I needed to be as emotionless and as professional as possible about the whole occasion. And I knew if I did that, I'd be very hard to beat.
Yeah, and it was a special win, obviously, because your mother is from Strand Hill, I think it is.
Yeah, my mum's from Sligo. So, yeah, my cousin, John McHugh, is the captain in 2020, which was, obviously, the West was cancelled that year. So I was very disappointed not to play in the West that year. He's caddied for me in multiple years in the West. So John came out and followed me playing this year in the final, or in the last few days of the West. So yeah, it's got a strong place in my heart, and it's a place that I've been going to a lot since I was young. Like, I think I had a very good match with Gary McDermott in 2013, where I understood, I saw a lot of the same members that were following my final match that I saw when I played against Gary McDermott in 2012, 2013. And I remember losing that match and being so disappointed, because the crowd maybe got to me at that stage, and I understood how tough it would be in the final. But because of all the members, the emotion that they have involved with the golf club, and also how well they treat me every time I go down there, it's very special. It's very special to me, and I'm sure a lot of other lads feel the same way.